Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 169 for October 18th, 2008. I'm still in the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey, but it's a beautiful autumn day, and in fact, it's fall festival weekend in Haddonfield, so I've left the studio for the day to get outside and enjoy the weather. Later in this episode, I'll explain just why Haddonfield is charming yet regrettably dry, even though there's a tavern in the center of town. We'll also hear from one of the world's top whiskey collectors. Giuseppe Bignoni has thousands of bottles in his cellars in Bologna, Italy, and next year will mark his 40th anniversary of collecting whiskey. That's coming up later, but first, let's take a look at the news. You've probably missed a friend's birthday at some point and had to buy a belated birthday card. Well, Old Forester will be releasing this year's birthday bourbon a bit late. Call it a belated birthday bourbon, if you will. Brown-Forman traditionally releases the Old Forester birthday bourbon each year on September 2nd to celebrate founder George Garvin Brown's birthday. But two things changed the schedule this year. There was a minor problem with glass shipments for the special bottle used for the birthday bourbon, but the main reason is this year's special release of Old Forester Repeal. I mentioned that one earlier this year. It's being released next month to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition on December 5th. And to meet the schedule, it was moved ahead of the birthday bourbon on the bottling calendar. The birthday bourbon is being bottled now, and it'll be available in limited quantities soon. In the U.S., a 16th birthday is often referred to as a Sweet 16, and Brook Laddie is coming out with a Sweet 16 of its own. Brook Laddie will be replacing its 15-year-old single malt with a new 16-year-old malt aged entirely in bourbon casks. The distillery is also releasing the first growth series of six limited edition 16-year-old malts aged in ex-Bordeaux casks. And in case you haven't picked up on the theme here, there was a birthday in my family this past week. My oldest daughter, Brianna, turned 21. She's developed a pretty good nose at home, and now she can legally have a dram with me in public. In other news, after a couple of years of duty-free sales and test marketing, Diageo is rolling out the Singleton series in the UK market with the Singleton of Dufton. Diageo has been making different malts available under the Singleton label in various markets. The U.S. gets the Singleton of Glendullen, while Asian markets get the Singleton of Glenord. As I've mentioned before, Scotland is celebrating the 250th anniversary of the birth of Robert Burns throughout 2009, and Arran Distilleries has released a special single malt to mark what's being called the Gathering in Scotland. Arran holds the exclusive rights to use Burns' name on Scotch whiskey. The 250th anniversary malt carries no age statement, but comes from ex-sherry casks and will be available only in the UK and Canada. Whiskey Fest New York is coming up in a couple of weeks, and you may remember that the recent San Francisco Whiskey Fest had some special whiskeys available for tasting at the charity table, including some one-of-a-kind Macallans chosen by several of Macallan's past distillery managers, Glenlivet Cellar Collections, and Glenfarclas Family Cask Malts. Turns out while they raised $8,000 for charity, the folks in San Francisco did not drink all the whiskey. And that means there will be some left for those of us attending Whiskey Fest New York on the 11th, and we can raise even more money. There will be other whiskeys at the charity table that night. I had the chance to talk with Jonathan Goldstein of Park Avenue Liquors in New York this week about what he's bringing to Whiskey Fest and how the financial crisis is affecting his business.
This year at Whiskey Fest, we're going to have our 40-year-old single grain from Invergordon on the charity table, and we're hoping to bring both our new Glenfarclas and our new Old Pulteney to the show.
And those are single casks just for you guys, right?
Single casks just for us.
Now, how has business been with the downturn in New York? Because I know you do a lot of corporate business with all the brokerage firms and everybody around here.
If anything, the corporate business has taken a step back, but the people who have money and spend money will always have money, and they're still spending. So it's been a bit more of a struggle to get the business, but we're working hard at it, and we're still plugging away.
Still selling $6,000 white Bowmores?
Not only that, I have a standing order for two Macallan Elite 55s if I can get my hands on them. I'm hoping to have them in a week or two.
Standing order from customers for them?
One customer in Texas, yeah.
Are you expecting things to get any better, get any worse anytime soon? Or do you guys see this when the market turns down? Some of you guys are used to, right?
Yeah, I mean, the business has been around since 34, and, you know, my father's been here since the mid-60s, so it's something that we've weathered before and we'll weather again. And, you know, you just have to know how to roll with the punches here and be smart about it.
There's a link to the Park Avenue Liquors site at the WhiskeyCast website. On the book front, Jim Murray has just released the 2009 edition of the Whiskey Bible, and in a behind-the-scenes move, he's bought out his publishing partner in past editions of the Bible. For the new edition, Jim has completely revised his sections on American and Canadian whiskeys with updated tasting notes and ratings. There's a link to Jim's website for orders, and I'll have an interview with Jim on an upcoming episode of WhiskeyCast. Also coming out in the next few weeks, Richard Patterson of White & Mackay has finally taken some time to sit down and write his memoirs. Goodness Knows, and that's N-O-S-E, with Gavin Smith will be published next month, and signed copies are available for pre-ordering through the Isle of Jura website. Richard's been busy with a major project, a 2-year renovation of the entire Dalmore lineup.
What we wanted to do was to bring up the style so that the consumers could really appreciate high quality that maybe perhaps they've not seen before. So what we have done is relaunched the whole of the packaging. The bottle remains the same, but more importantly, we're emphasizing the stag. The stag is the sort of logo of the Mackenzie family, and it really is reflected in one of these products, which I'll come on to very shortly. But the icon to begin with is the Dalmore 12 years old, and what we've done there, instead of keeping it at 30% Oloroso Methusalem Sherry Wood, we've actually increased it to 50%, 50% Methusalem, and we've actually left it another year, that is 3 years maturing, marrying in Sherry Wood with 50% American White Oak. So the notes of citrus fruits, marzipan, are still very much there for the forefront. So the consumer is really getting as a really warm, stylish 12-year-old in its own right. But then we had originally the cigar malt, but because of the anti-smoking and people smoking outside and the cigar bars suffering, and really a misunderstanding, we've actually changed it to the Gran Reserva. But what we have done with the Gran Reserva is we've kept that at 60% Oloroso to 40% American White Oak. Again, what we've done is increased the marrying to 3 years. So you're going to see these warm, spicy notes, but still that crushed almonds coming towards the end. The one that's really new to the portfolio is the 15-year-old Dalmore. This is Dalmore 15 years old, and it's a mixture of three styles of sherry. We've got Methusalem, 30 years old, from Gonzales Baez, Apostolese, which is 25 years old, and then we've got Amoroso, which is a lighter style. And this is highly complex, but beautiful, elegant, and very much refined. Further up the ladder, we've got the new Dalmore King Alexander III 1263. And what we've done here, instead of it being embossed on the bottle, this is an individual stag's metal stag that we've placed the emphasis on it, because it was in 1263 that King Alexander III was saved by one of the Mackenzie families, and because of him saving the king, he was allowed to use the emblem of the stag's head, and that's why it stays on this bottle today. Now, this is something completely different, because this is not just one or two finishes, this is six finishes. Going back to 1990, we've got, first of all, we've got port, we've got Marsala, we've got Madeira, we've got Cabernet Sauvignon, we've got American White Oak, and really we've got small batch bourbon in there. But it is the Madeira finish, more than anything, gives it the subtleness, the warmth of it. So this is something brand new, this is very unaged, but it is a very beautiful, complex, rounded whiskey for sipping and savouring. Then we move on to the Rare and Prestige range, which was introduced 2 years ago again, but they are limited editions. We had originally the 40-year-old Dalmore, the 40-year-old Jura, the 40-year-old White Mackay, and the 1973 Cabernet Sauvignon. But what we've brought in this year is a replacement, because the Cabernet Sauvignon has come and gone. This is a 1974... This is a 1974 Dalmore, and this has been in Sherrywood for no less than 5 years, Methusalem, and it is only 948 bottles. But because I've been given more time to manipulate the spell of the wood, it's not just the Apostolies, but it really is finished in Methuselah. And this is just pure luxury, must be sipped and savoured. All these whiskies I heartily recommend, but you must keep it in the top of the tongue, underneath, back in the middle, keep it there, and then let it go down. And let the tongue do everything. This is for after dinner with coffee, Dalmore, bit of chocolate, and if you've got time, you've got the right place, a beautiful cigar like a Cuban cigar or a Dominican Republic if you want, but really a lovely Hoya de Monterey Epicure number 2 or a Particus number 4. But these are all for sipping and savoring and enjoying pure luxury.
Now let me take you back to the King Alexander for a second. Is it hard to balance the 6 different finishes to get a good balance between the 6?
It's a very good question, but what I would say is, like the art of whiskey blending, I must manipulate and make sure each one complements the other. What I will not do, like other people sometimes, is let that particular style, whether it be sherry, Madeira or Marsala, dominate the spirit. You must let the citrus notes, the character of Dalmore, to emerge. These cask finishes are only complementary to the actual character and style of Dalmore. It's a matter of looking at it, manipulating it, and seeing that we've got a lovely chocolate box, really a colour, a mass of colours, all coming together in harmony. Although there's 6 different finishes, we finish them all in a sherry butt to actually finish all of them together. So there is a blending. It's like a blending process, but it's still a single malt because each one only comes from Dalmore, making it single malt.
What's the future holding? Because Dalmore has sort of always been sort of the secret among single malts. It's one of these underrated malts that a lot of folks don't, or sort of overlook in many cases, but with the new emphasis on it, it's really coming into its own now almost these days, right?
Yeah, what we're trying to emphasize is for many years, I make no mistake about it, when it was originally in America, it was the way it was marketing by a particular company there was sort of low-key, but we're really getting away from that because you've got to realize when we had originally the 12-year-old Dalmore, say 5 years ago, we also produced the most expensive whiskey in the world, you know, $46,000 bottle of Dalmore, 62 years old, and really it has to be complimentary all the way through. So that is very important to emphasize the quality, the time that it's taken to manufacture these casks. Each one is almost handcrafted, and we want to project that and give that to the consumer. But I would stress to you, they must be sipped and savored at the right time, right place. This is a different style, heavier style. It's not a light style. This is heavy, so it should be taken later at night.
By the way, Richard is scheduled to be pouring the Dalmore at Whiskey Live this coming Friday night in Toronto, and he'll be teaching a master class at Milroy's of Soho in London on November 3rd. That brings us to the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. In addition to Whiskey Live Toronto, this coming Friday night is the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society U.S. Chapter's Single Malt Extravaganza in Philadelphia, and the Brandy Library in New York City will hold a spirit school class on precious and rare scotches that same night. By the way, the Brandy Library's spirit sommelier, Ethan Kelly, will teach a class on American whiskeys at the Astor Center in New York City on November 7th. This coming weekend is the Lindoris Whiskey Society's Whiskey Fest in Lindoris, Belgium, and Whiskey Live Glasgow is October 31st and November 1st. It's followed by Whiskey Live Cape Town in South Africa from November 5th through the 7th. There's a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com. Now let's turn to collecting. Most of us have a few bottles of whiskey squared away. Some of us have a few hundred. And then there's Giuseppe Bignoni. His collection of spirits totals more than 40,000 bottles, including several thousand bottles of whiskey. While the Guinness Book of World Records currently recognizes the Clive Vidi's collection as the world's largest, it's currently going on display soon at the Scotch Whiskey Experience in Edinburgh, Bignoni's collection is nothing to sneeze at. In fact, he owns what was was once recognized by Guinness as the world's largest collection. He buys and sells rare whiskies through his Whiskey Paradise shop in Bologna, Italy, and next year will mark his 40th anniversary of collecting whiskey.
I started when I was a boy, 18 years old. One day, one of my friends get a new car, Fiat 500. He just gets a driving license. So we jumped the school, and we went to Florence from Bologna. So on the way, we stopped to have a coffee, and I see a nice packaging with three mini bottles of whiskey inside. Was a Glen Eagle, one white label, black label, and gold label. So I just have a look, and I buy one. And the gentleman came near to me asking if I was a collector of mini bottles. And I say, no, this is just the first three that I buy because I like the packaging. And because there is this and this. This mini bottle cost a lot of money. This. And then we arrived to Florence, and near the Duomo, there was a bar with two small cabinets outside full of mini bottles. So I buy some more. At the beginning, I buy everything, whiskey, cognac, gin, tequila, whatever. But after that, I understand it was too much. So I concentrated in whiskey because at that time it was 1969. London and Scotland, but basically London was in fashion because of the Beatles, because everybody wanted to go, no? So I start just to taste a little bit of whiskey, and I like it. So I start to write letters to the distillery to get mini bottles, and I make my first trip to Scotland, checking for mini bottles. And so I knew a lot of people. The father of Michael Arkart teach me 90% of what I know about the old bottles came from his father. His father teach me everything. And after that, I left the mini bottle for the water jug, the whiskey jug, and finally for the big bottles. And it still was a hobby until 1994. I started to do something in 1991 with Japan, because I met a guy in Tokyo in a bar, and he was drinking some old whiskeys. So I say, well, you are a whiskey expert because I see what you are drinking. Oh, I say, yes, I'm an importer. You are from Italy. Can you get some Macallan for me? I say, yes, I can. So I start to do something, but it was not my business. I mean, my business at that time was decorated glass that we do in Thailand. And so I start to do something with Japan, but let's say 100, 200 bottles per year, no more. And in 1994, I bought a big stock from an Italian importer. Was 5,500 bottles, and I started to do a regular business with Japan. In 1996, I bought another big stock in Italy, 33,000 old bottles from the very famous gentleman that makes the whiskey market in Italy, starting in 1958. And from that time, I started to make business. I forget the other one because I cannot do two business by myself. You do not make nothing good. Just one is okay. I mean, to have a nice business. So I start to sell whiskey to Japan, basically in quantity, but collectors, but only old stuff, nothing new. Or, okay, if it is new, it should be rare, limited edition or something like that, in terms of high value. And also, from time to time, I sell some whiskey to the distillery because they don't have some old expression. It's nice. I mean, and for me, and of course, I build my showroom. I have a 200 square meter showroom with all the bottles in exhibition, my collection, plus 440 square meters with the bottle for sale. That is about, at the moment, about 40,000 bottles, old ones. This is the history of the whiskey. And people is ready to pay to drink something that is that you cannot find. You can, even today, the Scotch whiskey industry cannot repeat the taste of the whiskey distilled before the war or after the war, until 1970, middle of the 70s, there was a big change in the whiskey industries, in new equipment, new way to make its distillation. If you think that at the beginning of the century, last century, of course, in a distillery work 50 people, no? Now a distillery can, maybe two people are enough, maybe three when you have to move the barrel. So it's there is no more end job like in the past in the whiskey. It's for that they cannot remake the same whiskey as it was, I mean.
It almost seems like the computers have taken the flavor out of the whiskey.
Yes, of course. This is the question. In the past, everything came from the distillation and from the cask. The fortune of Gordon MacPhail was they opened a shop in 1895. They used to import a lot of sherry from Spain to sell. And they have the cask that contained the sherry before, and they can use for his whiskies. This was his fortune, because the old ones, are old sherry cask, are fantastic.
What don't you have in your collection that you would like to acquire?
Oh, a lot of bottles. A lot, because any time, let's say, sometime you can find something. Last Thursday I bought a bottle in an auction, just a Dewar's, beginning of the century, a blended whiskey. I paid €1,500 for this bottle. And there is another one similar, I say again, close with tin cap, it is a Balloclade BL whiskey, that I see the bottle in a book, but I never see one real one. And this one I like to have, but, you know, okay. Difficult to find, but sometimes I find one to put in my collection. And I'm not so... I cannot collect everything, of course, because if you collect everything, you need money, a lot of space. So I'm concentrated just in some bottle from Gordon MacPhail, tin cap, and distillery bottling. Plus some nice limited edition of independent bottler. Of course, blended whiskey, old ones. The important thing for me is old bottles. New, I don't care too much. I prefer to taste the whiskey. Unless, I say, it's very limited edition, very good whiskey, very nice presentation, maybe a nice crystal decanter, like Macallan do, two bottling in Lalique decanter that are... The whiskey is fantastic, 55 years old Macallan, and the bottle is unbelievable. But price is $9,000 per bottle. So, and this I like. But Macallan give me only one. I ask for six.
How do you avoid being caught up by the fakes?
Oh, the fakes is a big problem. And my fortune is that I have a lot of original bottles, a lot of original case, still closed. So I can easily check eventually the difference between my bottles and the ones that I buy. Anytime I have to check because... maybe we can understand, of course, if you open the bottle and taste the whiskey, if you know the whiskey, you understand immediately if this is a fake one or not. But however, there are a lot of fakes. Basically on the internet, a lot. A lot.
Have you been caught?
Sorry?
Have you been burned by fakes?
Yes, I bought some in the past. Because I bought because everybody buys, so I say, oh, old bottles, everybody has. Somebody came to me and said, why you don't have this and this and this? So I start to buy something, but at the end were fakes. So, however, I still have an exhibition. Nice bottle, but fakes. No way. However, it's part of... the life, no. In any business, there are fakes. Cars, painter, you know. So it's okay. I mean, I have probably 50, 60 bottles that I'm sure are fakes. But old ones, very well done. I mean, are nice, really, you know. Even somebody taste one bottle, two bottles. And the whiskey is still good, but finally after the analysis it was fake.
What is the best part of collecting whiskey?
The best part. The best part.
What is the best part about collecting whiskey? The best part
is the hunting. I mean, when you go to check for the bottle, you have somebody that maybe has a parents somewhere that has something in the cellar, and you go in and you move like that, and you find something very, very good. This is the most exciting part. When you have the bottle in the hand, okay, you can look and say, oh, very nice. But the more exciting part is the hunting. When you go to check for something, sometimes you get nothing. But it's exciting in any case, you know. Because I tell you something, because it's exciting. I got an information about 6 cases of whiskey from 1961 and 1958. Johnny Walker, Dewars, and White Label, 6 full cases, were in Wiesbaden, Germany, near Frankfurt. I wake up 4 o'clock in the morning with my car. 11:30 I was in Wiesbaden, and the gentleman has a restaurant in Shire Forest. I cannot find him. Okay, 12 o'clock, I find him. And he showed me the case, it's still closed. We just have a talk. I pay 12:30. I come back and 9:30 in the evening I was at home. 2,400 kilometers from 4 o'clock in the morning to 9:30 in the evening. Nobody can stop me. No need coffee, no need nothing, because I was so excited, no? And this is the best part of collecting.
What's the hardest you've had to track down or go to find a rare whiskey?
What do you mean?
What was the hardest search?
The hardest search was one of a gentleman that was really not untouchable. I mean, you cannot go near him. Because somebody knows that he has a lot of things, but he do not allow it to nobody to go. You know? He do not open his door for nobody, just for himself. And I try many, many different ways with people that know him, and this was about for 5-6 years. I tried to go to see this. Last year, October, I got a call from his wife, and I says, "I know from my husband that you want to come many times. Now you can come because my husband is died, so I have the cellar full of bottles and don't know to whom to sell. And I know from my friends that you are the right person to evaluate my cellar and." And this was 6 years waiting to go to see, and in my town, not so far. So this is something that you finally get. It was not really so exciting because there are few whiskey bottles, few, and many cognacs that do not interest me too much, just for the business, okay. So this is the way, you know. You never know what happened about bottles. Sometimes people say no, sometimes people say yes. And sometimes people said, I want 1,000 euro, and after a week you can buy for 500 or 400 or 300. This is the most exciting and interesting part, because it's like a joke, no? Sometimes, if you have professional people that have cases, you have to be careful, because you have to be reliable, otherwise... For me, people already in Italy know that what I have bought, so they know that I'm a good payer, and I very... Also, how do you say, I do not talk to somebody else where I buy, what I buy, what I paid, so... It's like antiquaire, the same. You have to protect your source.
One final question. Many, many years from now, when it comes your turn to decide what happens to your collection, but before you pass on,
yeah,
you get the choice of one bottle from that collection to decide what you're going to drink for your last dram. Which one do you go down to the cellar and pull out of the rack?
At the moment, because I don't know what I get from 20 years, no?
Right, but right now, out of what you have right now, which one do you pick?
Probably a King George the V, bottled at the beginning of 20th century, 1905. This is a bottle that I have to taste before to die, for sure. But this could be even in a special occasion, I have to die the day after. You know, this should be the next nice bottle that I drink. If I kept the bottle until when I'm ready to die, the day before, I open this one, for sure. Because the whiskey should be good, especially matured in sherry wood. It's a blended, it's not a malt. Probably inside there is 70-75% of malt whiskey. Because in the past, the blended whiskey was done until the 60s, inside there was 60-65% of malt. Now it's just 8%, 6%, no more. So this should be a very nice whiskey, for sure.
If you'd like to see some of his collection, there's a link to his Whiskey Paradise website at the WhiskeyCast website. Finally, I mentioned at the beginning that I'd explain the reason why a dry town like Haddonfield has a tavern in the center of town. You see, the dry part only dates back to Prohibition, but Haddonfield's history goes all the way back to colonial times. It's located about 10 miles or so outside of Philadelphia, and back in July of 1776, when what Americans now call the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia, these men were viewed by the king's soldiers as insurgents, and they faced immediate hanging if they were captured. They immediately took off out of Philadelphia, and a number of the Founding Fathers wound up taking refuge in Haddonfield at the Indian King Tavern on what's still known today as King's Highway. The tavern is still there. It's just a museum now. And that's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and you'll find links, the calendar of events, my updated whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.